David Brainerd was born in 1718 into a strong Christian family in Connecticut. So I think this is the first one we've talked about that's actually been in the United States, right? We've been focusing on Africa, Europe, Ireland, England. But here we're making a move into the United States. And here's a rendering of David Brainerd, and I think it's probably a pretty good one. He was a very intense individual, and he was a very thoughtful individual, which manifested itself, I think, in a few different ways. But he's kind of pondering off there. He's got a bit of a furrowed brow. This is how I kind of picture him, you know. He's a serious guy. His life was full of challenges. Did not have an easy life. His father died when he was 9 years old. And his mother died when he was 14. So that grows you up real quick, doesn't it? And that was certainly true of Brainerd. And he would struggle his entire life with depression. So I said he was a thoughtful individual. I mean, he would call it melancholy, right? But he was one who was, he wasn't a social butterfly. He was not, you know, really chipper and up all the time. He functioned between low and really low most of the time, all right? But he's just a serious-minded guy. And it seems, actually, there was some propensity towards depression or melancholy in his family, which is another story. But when he turned 19, he inherited a farm, and he tried his hand at farming. But that only lasted 1 year. He was not a farmer. And it just... his heart was not in it. He had a real strong desire for education. He wanted to learn. He had an active mind. And so at the age of 21, during this season of searching and kind of unsure what to do, he responded to the gospel. So he grew up in this home where he heard about the gospel, but he had never really responded until he was 21 years old. And God brought him to himself. And he went off to study at Yale, which at the time was a training center for pastors. Right? This would be like going off to Moody Bible Institute or Word of Life or something where you were going to get Bible training. And this is what he did. But even here, there was struggle. He had to leave for a good portion of his first year because he contracted measles and was so sick that he had to go home. During his second year, he contracted tuberculosis. Once again, had to withdraw early because he's coughing up all the stuff, right? And this is actually, this would mark, just lock on to that he's 21 years old, 22 years old when he contracts tuberculosis. I mean, we're talking his life would be marked by physical struggle, right? That's an important part of his story. The Great Awakening was sweeping across New England. Well, here we go. We have to look at Connecticut first. That's where most of his life was spent, in that region there in the United States. At this time, the Great Awakening had swept across the colonies of New England. And so we have figures like George Whitefield. George Whitefield was actually an evangelist or a pastor from England, but he traveled over to America to speak in New England and in the colonies, and it was like a rock concert. I mean, they said that he would speak in the open air to 20,000. Benjamin Franklin estimated that there were 20,000 people listening to George Whitefield preach in the open air. I mean, this was a major, you know, event. So something was really stirring here, right, in the heart of this young America, in the midst of all the turmoil that it was experiencing with Britain and such. And this is before the Revolutionary War, before the Declaration of Independence, right? So all this stuff's going on, but there's a real movement of God there. And Whitefield's ministry was kind of controversial because he was kind of using some new methods. It wasn't real traditional. And so many of the established schools and such, like Yale, were a bit suspicious of all of this. And there's some tensions that were growing between this sort of new generation and that was responding to Whitfield and sort of the establishment. And actually, the school brought in another individual to help maybe speak to this with the students. That was Jonathan Edwards, who was a preacher there in New England. And Edwards sided with students. That didn't go over big with the Yale professors and administrators, right? But one of the ones in attendance that day when Edwards spoke at Yale was David Brainerd, right? He represented this new generation that was coming to Christ and excited about serving him and wanting to see people respond to the gospel. So at this period of time, Brainerd and Edwards developed a connection that would really pay dividends going forward. It was because of this controversy that Brainerd was expelled from Yale in 1742. He had criticized one of his professors by saying, "You have no more grace than a chair." Which essentially he was saying this professor, he was questioning whether this professor was even saved. There was just no interest in spiritual things, no interest in the lost, and Brainerd was just frustrated with it. And they expelled him. He appealed the decision multiple times, but to no avail. He would not be reinstated. The bridge couldn't be mended. And the experience made a really deep impression on him, even as it related to his commitment to Christian unity going forward. His melancholy self, he thought back on that episode a lot. But it was also sort of problematic from another standpoint, and that was that Brainerd couldn't become a pastor in New England. Recent laws had passed that if you didn't go to Harvard or Yale or a European university, you would not find a ministerial post in Connecticut. So his grandfather had been a pastor, his brother Nehemiah was a pastor, but that dream was ending with David Brainerd. But God used those circumstances to direct him into missions. Right? He could still preach. And he was licensed to preach actually by a Scottish mission organization. Instead of pastoring in a traditional church, he was out on the front lines, particularly reaching American Indians, Native Americans. And so God used even that heartbreaking experience at Yale to really direct his path. And you have to remember that America was a British colony at this point, and there was a fierce battle going on between the English and the French and the Spanish. I mean, all this is happening in the New World, and the Indians were really caught in the middle. They suffered greatly. We know this from our history books. And not only from sort of the soldiers, but even the European diseases decimated the Indians. Some estimates say up to 90% of the Indians in New England died as a result of European illnesses. Whatever the percentage is, it was a major hit. So this was a needy population, and it was tough work because the Indians didn't like the Europeans, right? And didn't trust them. Hello? And here Brainerd is trying to come along. He has compassion for them. But how do you even do this, right? Not an easy assignment, to say the least. He did a brief internship on Long Island and then set out to work among the Mohicans in near Albany, New York. Diligently learned the language, but experienced very little success in that year. And then he began a new work among the Delaware Indians, northeast of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. But here, too, saw very little success. Few conversions, and he was quite discouraged and despondent, experienced intense loneliness and sustained illness, again with the tuberculosis as it continued to wreak havoc on his body. The demands of travel to these various Indian settlements was very intense. He writes in his diary that he would often travel up to 30 miles from his outpost, right, to find a settlement with two or three Indian families. You know, they were, a lot of times they were spread out. And then he just hoped that they were at least civil to the message of the gospel. They would, after all that travel, that he could get the message across to them. Estimated that he traveled 3,000 miles on horseback in the course of his ministry, which, as we will see, his ministry was pretty short. So he really labored so hard. In 1745, at the age of 26, he moved to New Jersey, where he would spend between a year and 2 years, ministering to the Indians there near Trenton. And although he had not really seen many conversions previously, here he did. It wasn't huge and explosive, but in a year and a half, a small congregation of over 100 Indians had formed, which was very encouraging to Brainerd. And in addition to the gospel ministry, he ministered compassionately to the Indians. He established schools among the Indians, which they actually wanted and desired. They wanted to be able to interact with the Europeans and understand what was going on in terms of sale of land. And there was all sorts of things that were passing them by. And Brainerd was an advocate for them and helped to teach them, help them to navigate the complex systems that the Europeans were establishing. He actually moved that group, that congregation, down to a part of New Jersey, a 300-acre tract where they could farm. Traditionally, the Indians didn't own land, right? So to carve out a space for them was really important, and Brainerd helped in all of that. By the fall of 1746, Brainerd's physical condition had deteriorated to the point that he could not continue. And his longtime friend, Jonathan Edwards, brought Brainerd to his own home in Massachusetts, where Brainerd would spend his last months. And he died in October of 1947 at the age of 29 years old. And his ministry with the Indians had lasted less than 3 years. But his impact was tremendous, right? His impact, in part, we see in Jonathan Edwards himself. Jonathan Edwards wrote about that experience of having Brainerd stay in his home and die in his home. He said, "We had opportunity for much acquaintance and conversation with him, and to show him kindness in such circumstances, to see his dying behavior, to hear his dying speeches, to receive his dying counsel, and to hear the benefit of his dying prayers." To have the benefit of his dying prayers. And in addition to that, his daughter, Jerusha, who was 18 years old, she had tended to Brainerd in his sickness, and she contracted tuberculosis and died 4 months later. So obviously Edwards felt this deeply. And here he's pastoring in a large church, and but he looked at Brainerd as just a symbol of Christian commitment. So much so that he took it upon himself to edit Brainerd's diary, knowing that others needed to hear about Brainerd's story, and be encouraged by it. So Edwards himself, who's such a key figure, was inspired and shaped by his encounter with David Brainerd. David Brainerd's brother, John, was deeply inspired, and he would carry on the work among the Indians. He picked up, as Brainerd is heading to Massachusetts, he had a meeting with his brother in Newark, and charged his brother, and his brother He went to David Brainerd went to Massachusetts to die, and John made his way back down to the Indians there in New Jersey, where he would spend the next 34 years. So Brainerd inspired him to deep service. Due to Brainerd's expulsion from Yale, two new ministry training centers were established as well. So this was another byproduct of his life and his commitment, Dartmouth and Princeton, which is probably not where you train pastors today. But again, at that time, these were the new conservative schools, and that really flowed out of Brainerd's commitments and his conscience during that time. And Brainerd's diary, of course, would influence the next wave of missionaries, including William Carey in India and Jim Elliot in Ecuador. Brainerd's diary was kind of the missionary classic for those that were serious about global missions. There was one section here I wanted to read to you out of his diary. I'll see if I can... Yeah, this is a section that says the next day he, and this is Edwards, certain sections of the diary, Edwards paraphrases. So this is Edwards, but he's summarizing Brainerd's diary. The next day he set out on his journey to Susquehanna with his interpreter. He endured great hardships and fatigues in his way thither through a hideous wilderness, where after having lodged one night in the open woods, he was overtaken with a northeasterly storm, in which he was almost ready to perish. Having no manner of shelter and not being able to make a fire in so great a rain, he could have no comfort if he stopped. Therefore, he determined to go forward in hopes of meeting with some shelter, without which he thought it impossible to live that night through. But their horses, happening to have eaten poison for want of other food, at a place where they lodged the night before, were so sick that they could neither ride nor lead them, but were obliged to drive them and travel on foot. They had to push the horses. Right? Until, through the mercy of God, just as dusk came, they came to a bark hut where they lodged that night. After he came to Susquehanna, he traveled about 100 miles on the river and visited many towns and settlements of the Indians, saw some of seven or eight distinct tribes and preached to different nations by different interpreters. He was sometimes much discouraged and sunk in his spirits through the opposition that appeared in the Indians to Christianity. At other times he was encouraged by the disposition that some of these people manifested to hear and willingness to be instructed. He here met with some that had formerly been his hearers at Conemaugh and had removed hither, who saw and heard him again with great joy. He spent a fortnight among the Indians on this river and passed through considerable labors and hardships, frequently lodging on the ground and sometimes in the open air. At length he felt extremely ill as he was riding in the wilderness, being seized with an ague, followed with a burning fever and extreme pains in his bowels and head, attended with a great evacuation of blood. Tuberculosis, right? He thought he would perish in the wilderness. Just one little snippet of all of the stuff that he was enduring in his commitment to these Native Americans. So a few lessons here as we draw this together. Number one, life is short. It should be lived with a sense of purpose. Brainerd died at the age of 29, but he expended himself in the cause of Christ. Sickness was always present. That's one of the things that stood out to me. You know, when you're just not feeling good, it's hard to... I'm a baby when it comes to being sick. I don't get sick that often, but man, And I'm struck with that. He's feeling lousy from age 21, 22, second year in college, until his death 6-7 years later. And yet, he is pressing forward, you know, just... There's a commitment there and a sense that he knew his time was short. He wrote this, "Oh, how precious is time and how it pains me to see it slide away while I do so little to any good purpose." There's the melancholy, right? He's thinking he's accomplishing nothing. "Oh, that God would make me more fruitful." Yeah, that sense of time, using every moment, every year, every season. I think also here we see, have an encouragement that we ought to serve God with patience and faithfulness. Effective ministry doesn't happen overnight. We should not define success based on circumstances or outward results. Here he labored at a couple of different parts of the country, ministering to Indians with very little result, but eventually he found fertile soil where the seed took root and grew and produced fruit. And then to even look at what happened with his brother's subsequent ministry, that we need to think of our efforts when we share the gospel not as success or failure, but as part of a great planting, watering, harvesting process of which we're only one part. There's other people in the harvest fields, and the harvest is taking place over the course of a long time. Brainerd was a faithful missionary, but the vast majority of people rejected the message. He could have thought his life to be a failure, his ministry to be a failure, but you need to see with different eyes. Three, God uses weak people to do some of his best work. And Piper had a great summary statement about Brainerd here. He said, Brainerd's life is a vivid, powerful testimony to the truth that God can and does use weak, sick, discouraged, beat down, lonely, struggling saints who cry to him day and night to accomplish amazing things for his glory. That is so true. At least 22 times, distinct times in his diary where he longed for death as a freedom from his misery. I mean, he was riding low. And yet, he struggled through, pressed through. And in some ways, that depression and that brokenness contributed to the effectiveness of his ministry, right? Brainerd wasn't alone, and we could cite Elijah and David and others, godly men and women who walked a similar path. Number four, we must speak truth to ourselves and surround ourselves with people who will speak truth to us. Edwards notes a couple of faults. When he gives his little introduction to Brainerd and then edits the diary and puts it forward, he found a few faults with Brainerd. And one of them was this. Brainerd was, by his constitution and natural temper, so prone to melancholy and dejection of spirit. This, he felt, was a fault. Brainerd acknowledged it. This, again, is a section of Brainerd's journal that Edwards is paraphrasing here, but he said Brainerd often in conversation spoke of the difference between melancholy and godly sorrow, true humiliation and spiritual desertion, and the great dangers of mistaking the one for the other, and the very hurtful nature of melancholy. So, in other words, we ought to feel really bad and crummy about sin, right? I ought to feel guilty when I sin, when I say something hurtful to someone else, or when I neglect certain duties that I ought to undertake. And yet, then there's this area of melancholy, just negative self-talk, right? And he recognized the difference, and he recognized the danger of unhealthy melancholy, of letting a record play in your head that's not true. And so Brainerd was recognizing this even about himself. And he actually warned his brother about this when his brother was embracing the ministry with the Indians. The other thing that I thought was notable, and I lumped it in this section, was Brainerd's isolation. I think that contributed to his depression and to his melancholy. He wrote this at one point. I said, I have no fellow Christian to whom I might unbosom myself and lay open my spiritual sorrows, and with whom I might take sweet counsel and conversation about heavenly things and join in social prayer and corporate prayer, right? I mean, he just didn't have, he was isolated. And it seems to me that that was part of the problem too. Part of the problem was that he had some things going on in his mind, some untruths that he was were playing on the record player of his mind that needed to be confronted. But he also didn't have other people bringing perspective to him and challenging his thinking, right? And that seems to be another aspect of this. It seems that, and at one point he did ask for a colleague. He wrote to a pastor in New England, and he asked for funds to be made available for someone to come and join him in the work. And that never materialized, but it seems to me that that was another major problem and lesson. If we want to just look at negative lessons out of Brainerd's life, that's one of them. And finally, we must maintain a regular discipline of work and rest. Edwards, again, noted this as another fault. Brainerd was excessive in his labors, not taking due care to proportion his fatigues to his strength. You know, he would preach through the day and ride his horse through the night and then preach the next day, you know, and just... You look at the amount of miles that he was traveling when he was not well physically. There was no sense of regard for rest and rejuvenation. He acknowledged again that he ought to have taken more thorough care, and I'm quoting here, he ought to have taken more thorough care and been more resolute to withstand temptations to such degrees of labor as injured his health. Accordingly, he warned his brother, who succeeds him in his mission, to be careful to avoid this error. And I looked up the quote this week. I thought it was a David Brainerd quote, but actually it was a quote by Robert Murray McShane. Let's see here. Here it is. McShane also died at the age of 29 from exhaustion and overwork. He was a minister. But he said this, and to me it rings true with Brainerd as well. God gave me a horse and a message. I have killed the horse, and I can no longer deliver the message. And I think that's so true of Brainerd's life to a degree. There's a call there for us to take care of ourselves. And I remember I have a lot of conversations, particularly with missionaries and medical ministries. We were talking to Todd DeKreiger about this through the years, you know, and Todd knew it as well. He had seen it play out. But Todd told me, he said, you know, if I'm not at the hospital, people die. And I remember saying to him, yes, they do. You're not God, right? And I think Brainerd might have responded that way. This is, but people are dying, right? And that's true. But we are not God. We're mortals. We can't operate 24/7. And so we ought to me, one of the lessons is to practice Sabbath, right? God's established a pattern of work and rest. Unfortunately for us, we're often on the wrong side of that. We are inclined to rest and recreate too much. Right, but there are a few souls among us who are so committed to their work that they don't rest enough, and we need to maintain a good balance according to God's creation design.